And it's very wonderful to be here with everyone this evening to discuss a topic that I think is crucial for our own future in spiritual life and crucial for the future of the Krishna consciousness movement. So I'm really happy to be here and meditate on this. A lot of what I'll speak today is simply for my own purification, remembrance, edification. And hopefully all of us will get something from the session. So before we begin, I'll just offer some prayers and then we'll continue from there. Om Agyana Timirandha Sigyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so as Abhi said, we'll try to leave time for questions and answers, because I think this is the kind of topic that we'd like to have a lot of discussion on. So I do have some slides, so I'm just going to kind of run through these slides and hopefully go for about 45 minutes to 50 minutes, and then we'll kind of open it up for questions and answers. So let us begin with a kind of a simple question that I want to ask all of you. Sorry, oh God. Just get my technology right here. Okay. Your love for me will be shown by ... Now, what I want you to do is just in the chat, and this isn't a rocket science question, when you think of Srila Prabhupada and think of this sentence, what comes to your mind? When Srila Prabhupada says, your love for me will be shown by, what comes to your mind? And if even if it says the same as what someone else writes, please still write it down, because I just want to get a sense of whether we're all on the same page. So when you hear Srila Prabhupada saying, your love for me will be shown by, what comes to your mind? Okay, so being a lot of answers. Thank you very much. Abhi says cooperation. Harivala be same. Sanket says reading my books. Radhika cooperation. Neil Abe, thank you. Cooperation. Tiru, book distribution. Okay. Service. Cooperation. Okay. So we're getting quite a lot of different answers there, but if we were to do one of those ask the audience on who wants to be a millionaire, it seems as though we're tending towards cooperation. Okay, good. Now let me ask you another question. If you hear Prabhupada say, you will please me if you, then what comes to your mind? Chant, Manav says. What else? Work together, serve, read my books, preach, read and distribute my books, spread Krishna consciousness, thank you, Amika, distribute and preach books, thank you. Go on a few more just to get a sense of what you're all thinking about this. Think about that point. They came to Prabhupada, they had many ideas in their mind, and they asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, what will please you the most? Milan, chant Hare Krishna. Thank you. Love Krishna, Manju. Okay, good. Please, Krishna, get back to Godhead. Vaishnav Seva. Okay, good. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay. There are many ways to answer this. Srila Prabhupada was so expert that he said many, many different things at many, many different times. Generally, his statement, your love for me will be shown by, we generally think of the statement where Prabhupada said, if you cooperate together, then that will be the demonstration of your love for me. This was a famous pastime in Srila Prabhupada's final days. Now, Srila Prabhupada's health was not very good, and different devotees were sending many, many different letters. And one devotee had sent a letter saying, Srila Prabhupada, there's a story in the Bhagavatam. There's a story of King Yayati who wants to give his old age to one of his sons so that he can be young again after he was cursed. And his son Puru indeed agrees to do that and takes his old age. So this devotee was writing of this story in the Bhagavatam and said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, maybe I can take on your old age and your impending death. Maybe I can take on all of your illness. Maybe instead of you leaving the world, I can leave the world and you can have your youth again. So that you can preach Krishna consciousness more and more. When Prabhupada heard that letter, he smiled and he said, this is nice. This is a very loving sentiment. This is a very loving sentiment. But then Prabhupada made the statement, your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate together after I disappear, in order for this movement to continue. It's a very, very powerful point. If you dig a little deeper in that, this devotee was willing to take on death. But Prabhupada said, I don't want you to take on death. I want you to learn to cooperate. And if you think about it, in one sense, to cooperate with others is more difficult than even death. Because you can give up your physical body, but in order to cooperate, you have to give up your false ego. You have to give up your pride. You have to give up your self-centeredness. And in one sense, that is even more difficult than giving up life itself. And so Prabhupada, in his ingenious answer to this devotee, and not just ingenious, very deep answer, said, your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate. On many occasions, devotees ask Srila Prabhupada, what will please you the most? And on many different occasions, Prabhupada said different things. Oftentimes, he did talk about preaching. He did talk about giving Krishna consciousness to others. Prabhupada said, I came to this world with such a big anxiety in my head. And now if you take some of this anxiety to spread Krishna consciousness, that will be very pleasing to me. One time he said, I want my sannyasi disciples to take on my burden of traveling so I can sit in one place and just translate the Bhagavatam. One time book distributors had come to Srila Prabhupada asking Srila Prabhupada, what will please you the most? And they wanted to get that answer of Srila Prabhupada saying it definitively, that if you distribute books, that will please me the most. And they wanted to sign and seal that for the rest of eternity. So it was said by the Acharya, signed and sealed in the annals of history. So they came to Prabhupada and they asked that question, Srila Prabhupada, what will please you the most? Anticipating Srila Prabhupada will say book distribution. And what did Srila Prabhupada say? What will please me the most is if you learn to love Krishna, if you become a pure lover of Krishna. If you genuinely take this process in your heart and you actually transform your consciousness into Krishna consciousness. And so Srila Prabhupada often talked about how preaching Krishna consciousness and at the same time loving Krishna, giving and at the same time experiencing spiritual life. This is what Srila Prabhupada came to give the world. Not just a message, not just a process, but something where people could actually change their lives. And therefore, when Prabhupada saw someone change their life, when Prabhupada saw someone falling in love with Krishna, that was very pleasing to him. Now, why am I raising all of this? Because we are living in Kali Yuga. And Kali Yuga is the Yuga which is characterized by two things, the Shastra says, and Srila Prabhupada says again and again in his books. Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Now, for a moment, quarrel and hypocrisy. Isn't it interesting? I was thinking about this the other day. Isn't it interesting that Srila Prabhupada said, your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate in an age which is characterized by quarrel. And Srila Prabhupada said, what will please me if your external activities are giving Krishna to others and your internal life is focused on Krishna? In other words, if you live an authentic, genuine, spiritual life full of integrity and you give that to others, in a world which is full of hypocrisy, that's what will please me the most. Because hypocrisy means someone inside is experiencing one thing, feeling something, thinking one thing, and outside they're projecting something completely different. But what Srila Prabhupada wanted is authentic, experience something, and then externally go out and share that with the world in a very authentic, genuine, and real and powerful way. So if we want to be powerful in Kali Yuga, if the Krishna consciousness movement is going to be outstanding, extraordinary, if the Krishna consciousness movement is going to be inspirationally different to the environment within which we're living at the moment, we might actually not have to do anything that amazing. Of course, we have to do something amazing. But maybe these two simple things, if we would actually do them as a movement, maybe these two things, if each individual in the Krishna consciousness movement would take very, very seriously, maybe this movement would actually get to the next level. Because these are things which is the complete antithesis of Kali Yuga. And so today we're going to focus on this one. What does it mean to be a genuine devotee? Is learning to love Krishna and then simultaneously going out and sharing that in the most authentic way as possible. The English language, we have so many of these dictums. Actions speak louder than words. Example before precept. Practice what you preach and walk the talk. Now, if we're able to do this, maybe that could have an incredible effect on the Krishna consciousness movement. So let's look a little bit more at what this means. What does it mean to practice what you preach? What does it mean, example before precept? What does it mean that you walk your talk? That's what we're going to look at today. If you would go to Vrindavan, then in Vrindavan, of course, in the holy spiritual land, we have two wonderful temples. We have the Krishna Balaram temple, but we have another temple, another ashram. And that ashram is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill. It's called Govardhan Palace. It was established by the Vaishnavas as a place where devotees could go and retreat and spend time going deep in their spiritual life and doing bhajan and really contemplating on the deeper aspects of their journey in Krishna consciousness. So we had the fortune on many occasions to stay there and live there. And absorb ourselves or try to absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness. So in that Govardhan Palace, many illustrious Vaishnavas stayed there. Many of the leaders of our movement and many incredibly profound devotees. Govardhan Palace was a place where Srila Prabhupada's books were being studied very deeply, and many books of the Acharyas were also being translated by BBT editors. So one of the BBT editors who translated many, many works of the Acharyas was Gopi Paranadhan Prabhu. And there, Gopi Paranadhan Prabhu, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who passed away 10 years ago, had his room there in the Govardhan Ashram. He had his room where he would deeply contemplate on the teachings of the Acharyas, and where he would think about how to bring this to the world so that everyone could benefit. And there in his room, in his humble dwelling in the Govardhan Ashram by the foot of Govardhan Hill, in his room, he had many books, many things. It was very simple. But there was one striking thing on his desk. On his desk, there was a framed quote. And when we see that quote, when we saw that quote, it kind of blew your mind. And this is the quote that was on his desk. Do not hear from the mouths of persons lacking proper conduct. If your conduct is below par, you should not publicly preach about the Lord. Close the door and preach to yourself. Bhajan really begins when one's outside and inside are the same. A very striking quote. So this is the quote. This is a quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Just here from the picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you can see how he was the lion acharya who was emanating such integrity, such purity, such genuineness of practice in spiritual life. And in this quote, which almost when you read it makes you shake in your boots, he's basically making many, many profound points. He's making the point that if one's inside and outside are not the same, if one's internal life is not developing, yet one is externally preaching about the Lord, then not only will that preaching have very minimal impact on others, but even in terms of one's own spiritual development, it can actually be very, very dangerous. If one is preaching, but one is not sincerely trying to practice at the same time, one is not sincerely trying to evolve their own consciousness, refine their own character, edify their own, or deal with their own anarthas, then that can also stunt one's own spiritual growth. And therefore, here Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was making a very strong statement: close the door and preach to yourself. So when I read that, I thought, okay, maybe we need to close up shop here. I discussed with some devotees about this quote. We got to this quote because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also said many, many other things. Here is another one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's famous quotes. Once he was in the assembly of Gaudiya Math, his disciples, and he declared in this very powerful statement that became etched within their hearts, his desire to preach. He said, "I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted person of the Gaudiya Math be willing to shed 200 gallons of blood for the nourishment of the spiritual corpus of every individual of this world." So that's very interesting, because on one hand is talking about having a very, very pure internal life and not looking to preach until one internally is very, very situated on firm ground. But at the same time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was driving his disciples to preach. It's mentioned, even if a brahmachari would go out and sell a few magazines, he was so happy this quote about go out and preach, and if no one comes, preach to the four walls. We heard it from Srila Prabhupada, but it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who would say that first to his disciples. Go out and preach, organize programs. Doesn't matter if anyone doesn't come, preach to the walls. It was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who was such an innovator, who was trying to reach so many people in ingenious ways. It was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who reintroduced saffron, who reintroduced sannyas for the purpose of expanding the preaching. So on one hand, we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about having a very strong internal life. And on the other hand, we're seeing that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is really pushing his people out there and telling them to preach. It's very important to study the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because if we want to understand Srila Prabhupada better, if we want to understand where Srila Prabhupada got so many things from and how Srila Prabhupada molded his own presentation of Krishna consciousness, then when we study the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we can begin to see where he got many, many things from. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if we go one step back now to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was the person that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took initiation from. Now, if we look in our whole Guru Parampara, probably you'll never find anywhere in the Parampara where there is such a stark difference between Guru and disciple as probably between Gaur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In so many ways, they were contrasting personalities. You may or may not be aware, if you see this picture of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji on the left-hand side, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was such an introverted person that he never wanted any picture taken of him in his whole life. And he actually managed that. In his whole life, no pictures were ever taken of him. But then you may ask, well, how do we get this picture then? It's mentioned that this picture was taken when Gaur Kishore Das Babaji had left his body. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur held up his body from the back, held his body in a pose as you see it now, and someone took this picture. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had himself removed from the picture. And that's the only way we were able to get a picture of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Someone who didn't want to show himself to the world. Yet on the right, if you look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was willing to go everywhere and expose himself to the world as much as possible. Such a stark contrast. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was going away from the world. He would chant in lavatories because he didn't want to be disturbed by the people of the world. He would say, I can tolerate the stench of stool and urine, but I cannot tolerate the stench of material desires emanating from all of these people who come to disturb me to get some blessings from a sadhu. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, while Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was trying to go away from the world, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was going into the world. He was going into the cities. He was going into the political institutions. He was going into all the places where many, many people were trying to be possible. Contrast. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was illiterate. Here you see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was perhaps a scholar par excellence. I mean, famed for his knowledge of astrology, Shastra, his incredible logic, his incredible power to debate, his incredible power to unpack and break down misconceptions within theology and philosophy. Such a scholar. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was illiterate. In this way, we're seeing how there were such different characters in one sense. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was basically known as a bhajananandi, someone who was just focusing solely on their own spiritual practice. Whereas Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a Gosi Anandi, someone who was going out, preaching, sharing, interfacing. Yet there is a great link between them. Although on one hand it seems they're starkly different, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur absorbed the mood of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. If you go to Chaitanya Math today, then in Chaitanya Math you'll see the Samadhi of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. So once, I think it was in 1933, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was giving a lecture at Gaura Kishore Das Babaji's Samadhi. And he said, my spiritual master, he gave me three instructions. He told me, number one, don't make any disciples. Number two, he told me, do not associate with non-devotees. And number three, he told me, never go to Calcutta, which is the world of Maya. So everyone was looking at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was boldly saying, you made every single one of these. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I followed perfectly. He told me never to make any disciples. And factually, all of these people who are called my disciples, I actually see that every one of them are my gurus. Because when I see their inclination to serve Hari, then it inspires me in my own spiritual life. So I never made any disciples. I made gurus. He said, my spiritual master told me not to associate with non-devotees. He said, I interfaced with so many non-devotees, but I never associated with them. Because to associate with non-devotees means to take something from them. But when I was with them, I never took anything from them. I was only giving them. And he said, number three, my spiritual master told me never to go to Calcutta, which is the world of Maya. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur created a landmark temple in Calcutta, the Bagh Bazar. I mean, you got to go to Calcutta to make a temple in Calcutta. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I never went to Calcutta because whenever I went there, I always stayed amongst Vaishnavas. And therefore, I was always in Vaikuntha because yatra gayanti madhbhakta tatra tistami narada. It's mentioned in the Puranas that wherever the devotees are, that's Vaikuntha. So in this little anecdote, one is seeing how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although externally someone who was a far-reaching Gosti Anandi, absorbed the mood of his spiritual master, who was a Bhajan Anandi. But not only did he absorb the mood of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji's Bhajan, but he also practiced that deep bhajan himself. I know when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was 31, he began a vow, a Nama Vrata. This Vrata is incredible. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, before beginning the preaching mission, said to himself, I must chant 1 billion names of Krishna. So at the age of 31, 1905, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur began this vrata. He stayed in a very simple place. He dressed very, very simply. He ate very, very frugally. And every day he chanted 192 rounds. Every day, 3 lakh names, 300,000 names of Krishna. And he continued that for 9 years, from 31 to 40. Maybe many of us on this call today are coming up to 40 or are around 40. I mean, just think about that for a moment. Someone who between 30 and 40 for that decade of their life simply sat down every single day and chanted 192 rounds every single day for practically a decade. How can we understand this deep mood of bhajan? This is the deep mood of bhajan that underpins Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's missionary success. Yes, he was a Gosthi Anandi. Yes, he was a preacher. Yes, he was a revolutionary missionary. But just see the foundation upon which it was based, a very deep life of bhajan. And therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in a beautiful quote, balanced the whole thing by saying, the best Gosthi Anandi is the Bhajanandi who preaches. It's like a brilliant statement. It's such a wonderful statement. I love it. He says, the best Gosthi Anandi is the Bhajanandi who preaches. And this was his life. He was definitely walking the talk. When he came out and he spoke about Krishna, he spoke about the holy name, we can understand. He experienced it because he had given himself to that deep bhajan. This is a very, very interesting logo. This is a logo of the Gaudiya Math. After Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had done his Namavrata, then he basically began the modern-day Hare Krishna movement in the form of the Gaudiya Math. And this was the logo of the Gaudiya Math, which basically gives you an understanding of how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur structured his mission. So here, basically, if you look at the from here all the way around here, this is dealing with the Bhagavat Marg. This word here says Raga. Because the Bhagavat Marg is meant to introduce or usher one into Raganuga Bhakti. So here you have the worship of Radha Krishna, which is primarily done, this word here says Kirtan, which is primarily done through Kirtan, through chanting, through the study of books, as is mentioned here, and through the distribution of books. This is a printing press here, showing the importance of preaching. So this is what the Gaudiya Math stood for. The Bhagavat Marg, which is chanting, reading, study of spiritual literature, and then going out and giving that to others. That was half of the mission of the Gaudiya Math. Now, if we look at the other side, this is dealing with Pancharatrika, which means one's connection with Krishna, especially in the form of the deity. So this word here says archanam, or worship. And here we have Radha and Krishna on this side. But here we have Lakshmi Narayan. When we worship Radha Krishna in the form of the deities, then we're worshiping them in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. And this word here says vidhi, which means rules and regulations. And so the other side of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission was one very much of one's own purification, one's own internal development of their relationship with Krishna in the form of the Archa Vigraha. And in this way, each devotee becoming closer and closer to Krishna through engaging in these timeless practices. Of course, here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These six words here that you see are basically the six opulences of Krishna. So, of course, we have the verse in Vishnu Purana, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashriya Vyanavairagyayascheva Sanam Bhaga Itingana, that Krishna is full of wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, renunciation, and so on and so forth. And right here in the center, this says, Om Nam. Om, obviously referring to the absolute truth, and Nam referring to the holy name of Krishna, which was at the very center of the Gaudiya Math. That everything we're doing, all of the preaching, all of the kirtan, all of the worship, All of the seva is so that we can get the mercy to then come back to the Naam, the holy name of Krishna. And in this way, therefore the verse is often chanted. Bhakti yoga, bhakti yoga, bhakti yoga dhan, bhakti e Krishna namir smarana krandam. Bhakti yoga, bhakti yoga, bhakti yoga dhan. If one wants to get the wealth of bhakti yoga, if one wants to get the true treasure of this practice, if one wants to mine the jewels which is attained from this beautiful path, bhakti e Krishna namir smarana krandam, one should, with tears in their eyes, with great desperation and great absorption, remember and chant Krishna's name again and again and again and again. So it's the name which delivers us in this age. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur focused everything around that so that devotees could come back and chant the name. Now, why am I showing you all of this? Because basically, Achar and Prachar. This was basically the mood in which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur structured his movement and passed it on to all of his followers. Achar means one's own edification, one's own purification. It can refer to one's character and qualities. And it can also refer to one's personal spiritual absorption. And prachar refers to one's preaching and service to others. So basically, Bhaktisiddhanta's mission was a mission based on both things, achar and prachar. Not just preaching, not just going out there and doing missionary work just by itself, but simultaneously achar, to be living that and experiencing that and feeling that within one's own consciousness. And of course, this combination of achar and prachar was not obviously not own creation, because it was time of the Goswamis. Because when the Goswamis met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and fell in love with him, and Mahaprabhu wanted to structure the whole Krishna consciousness movement through the Goswamis, then Mahaprabhu gave them different instructions. Bhakta bhakti Krishna prem tatvera nidhar Vaishnavera kritya ara Vaishnava achar Krishna bhakti Krishna prema seva pravartan Lukta Tirtha Udara Ara Vairagya Shikshan. These are the instructions that Mahaprabhu gave to the Goswamis. Bhakta Bhakti Krishna Prem Tatve Rani Dhar. Instruction one, write books which explain what is devotion and what is Bhagavan. Instruction one. Vaishnavera Kritya Ara Vaishnava Achar. Instruction two, show to the world what it means to be a Vaishnav through your own character and qualities. Krishna bhakti, Krishna prem, seva pravartan. Establish temples and establish the worship of deities where people can have the opportunity to do seva for Krishna and thus develop their Krishna bhakti. Lukta tirtha udara ar. Extraction four, excavate all the holy places. Are Vairagya Shikshan, and instruction five, become ideal renunciates, become spotless in your character, become a person of complete integrity, completely above suspicion, and in this way inspire the world in renunciation through your own example. So you can see when Mahaprabhu instructed the Goswamis, then he was instructing them in the external preaching and what to do for that. But he was also telling them about the internal life that he expected them to live, that he wanted them to demonstrate, so that that example would inspire generation. This is what we inspire. So consciousness, there is the internal aspect of our own life, and then there is the practical. I'm not using the word external because sometimes that makes it sound less important, but the practical things that we do to share Krishna consciousness with the world. And the Goswami were doing both, and they were adept in both, and that's why they were so powerful in their life. Sanatana Goswami came to Jagannath Puri. If for one moment one thinks what it must have been like in Jagannath Puri at that time. I mean, first you have Jagannath, which is the most ecstatic form of the Lord. And then you have something like Jagannath Rath Yatra, which is the most explosive festival in the whole of India. And then you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who's come to start the Harinam Sankirtan. And then you've got all of these Vaishnavas staying there, Rupa Goswami, Haridas Thakur, Sanatan Goswami, Ramananda Rai, all of these personalities. So one day Sanatan came to Haridas Thakur, who was staying in Siddhabakul. From Siddhabakul, he could not enter, obviously, the Jagannath temple, but he was seeing the chakra. And Sanatan Goswami came one day to Haridas Thakur's place, and he just began glorifying Haridas Thakur. And then he said, apane achare keha nakare prachar, prachara kareina keha nakare achar. He said, Haridas, some people are very good in their achar, na kare prachar, but they don't preach. Prachara kareina keha nakare achar. And there are others who like to preach, who love to preach, who are enthusiastic to go there and tell the whole world, na kare na achar, but in their own practice, they're deficient. Achar prachar namer karah dui karya, tumi sarva guru tumi jagater arya. Sanatan Goswami looked and he said, achar prachar namer karah dui karya, you do both. You have impeccable character. And at the same time, your preaching is amazing. Therefore, tumi sarva guru tumi jagater arya, you are the spiritual master of the whole world, because the spiritual master of the whole world, the most illustrious spiritual teacher, is not just one who speaks well, but one who's living it in their own life. And so we see this coming again and again, that we must walk the talk. We must practice what we preach. Our actions, our own realization speak sometimes louder than our own words. Example, before precept. This is the message we're getting again and again from the parampara. Just looking at time. Okay, 6:50. Okay, 10, 15 minutes and then we'll open it up. Please write some questions if you can, and then we can have a discussion on that. So let us now think, when we are a preaching movement, Bhaktivedanta Mana, ISKCON is a preaching movement. Bhaktivedanta Mana is a preaching movement. Pandavasena is definitely a heavyweight preaching movement. And when we're preaching, often we have to focus on a lot of practical dimensions of preaching. What is the practical dimension of preaching and sharing Krishna consciousness? We have to be relevant. We have to address people's needs, interests, concerns. We have to speak to them in a language that they can understand. Very, very important. We have to be understandable. If you want to take someone somewhere, first you have to meet them where they are. So yes, we must be understandable. We must be able to communicate Krishna consciousness in a way that people can digest it. We have to be dynamic. We have to move with the times. We have to utilize the technologies available, understand the trends that are going on and tap into them. We have to be organized. Prabhupada said, yes, organization and intelligence. This is how the movement will go on. So there is a whole practical dimension to sharing Krishna consciousness. But now I'm kind of going to get into the crux of what I want to share with you. There is also an internal dimension to Krishna consciousness that we have to deeply consider. There is an internal dimension to preaching which makes it actually work, which makes it actually powerful, which makes it actually go into a deeper place within people's hearts. First thing is integrity. The integrity of the preacher. How much they're actually in line with what they're saying. We often hear that there's the book Bhagavad and then there's the person Bhagavad. And the person Bhagavad is the one who in their conduct, in their mind, words and activities encapsulates the teaching of the Bhagavatam. And Srila Prabhupada, I mean, imagine someone who was followed everywhere, who was videoed, whose classes were recorded, whose room conversations were recorded, who was practically followed by people from morning to evening, day after day after day, but who was never found to be duplicitous, hypocritical, who was never found to be superficial, who was never found to be pretentious in any way. How much integrity Srila Prabhupada had? One person, he said, I looked at Srila Prabhupada and what convinced me that this is a saintly person is that I observed him day in, day out, and I practically saw that he was never trying to impress anyone. I thought that was a profound realization. He said he was never trying to impress anyone. And that convinced me this is a saintly person. Because only a saintly person can conduct their life in such integrity that they don't have any of that superficiality. The internal dimension of preaching is to preach with realization. Mukunda Maharaj met Prabhupada for the first time. It's a fascinating account. He talks about how he went into the Bowery and walked up the stairs and how he saw Prabhupada for the first time, the whole scene, how he sat down and heard from Srila Prabhupada. And he said, practically, I heard Srila Prabhupada, practically, I couldn't understand what he was saying. But when I heard the vibration coming from his mouth, I couldn't understand what he was saying fully. I couldn't grasp it. But I sensed that here was someone who had something very important to tell the world, because when he spoke with such urgency. In other words, when we communicate with others, we're not just communicating words, but we're communicating our conviction. And Srila Prabhupada, because he had so much realization, when he spoke, he could speak the same things that we may try to repeat. But when Srila Prabhupada spoke, it was power-packed, because it was power-packed with a heavyweight realization behind it. How much realization do we have of what we're speaking about? When we speak with realization, it has more impact. Empowerment. The internal dimension of preaching is to understand Krishna Shakti Vinana Hey Paravartan, that without Krishna's empowerment, there is no possibility to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. I mean, Shiva was 69. Sorry, not 60. When did he go right? Right, he was 63. 63. Prabhupada went to Radha Damodar in 1959. He knew that he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He was already 63 years old. I mean, time was running out. Yet Prabhupada still felt it was absolutely necessary to go to Radha Damodar and stay there for 6 years at the age of 63, when his time is already running out. But he said, no, I've got to take this time. I've got to pray at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Raghunath and get their mercy before anyone can spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And there Prabhupada stayed in Radha Damodar, praying, meditating, serving, beseeching the Goswamis for their mercy to do his mission. because he realized Krishna Shakti Vinana He Dada Prabhu, without the mercy, without the empowerment and compassion. That is another huge internal dimension of preaching, that how much do we actually have the compassion? Sometimes we're exposed for our lack of compassion. I remember once I was in Kettering, I was distributing books all day. We were flying out so many books. In the middle of the day, I met a Christian lady, and she wanted to convince me that she was actually very impressed at what I was doing. But naturally, she wanted me to be a Christian monk. So we had some conversation, and then she left. And I carried on distributing books. And then she came back half an hour later, but she didn't come back to me. She sat on a bench close by to where I was distributing books. So I could see she was there and she was watching me, but she didn't come and speak to me. I carried on distributing books probably for another 3 or 4 hours. And she was sitting right there for all of that time. I finished distributing books. The books had finished by Krishna's grace. And she came up to me. And with tears in her eyes, she went into her bag and she pulled out a Bible, a deluxe Bible, an expensive Bible that she had just bought from Waterstones. And she looked at me and she said, "I've been watching you all day. You're amazing. Your sacrifice is so great. I can see you have all the spiritual qualities. Now, please just consider reading this book. It will really help you." So I was like, "You've been sitting there for 4 hours. Why didn't you just tell me 4 hours ago?" She said, "No, I didn't want to disturb you. I didn't want to disturb you. I don't want to cause a disturbance. Now you're finished. I'm just coming up. I waited this long because I wanted to give this to you." And at that moment, I just felt so exposed. Because there I was standing in the street all of those hours in that day, flying out so many books. But practically, I thought to myself, I didn't give out one book with the compassion, with the concern, with the care, with the genuine love that she has just handed me this book. And as we were going home, we remembered the quote, "You can love to preach, but do you love the people you're preaching to?" Prabhupada had that love. He had so much compassion. Therefore, when he communicated, it hit a higher spot in people's, or a deeper spot in people's consciousness. So now what I want to say basically is that obviously both of these dimensions are incredibly important in sharing Krishna consciousness. But what can sometimes happen is that we veer towards dealing with these things and we can neglect the internal. Why may that happen? Because, you see, things on this side are tangible. Things on this side are somewhat intangible. And sometimes, therefore, it's more difficult to focus on them, focus on the internal dimension. Things on this side are appreciated. People will see it. People will applaud you for it. People will commend you for it. But things on this side are things in the invisible world that no one sees. And generally, the parts of our life that no one sees are the parts of our life that we generally don't put much energy into, because we're very concerned about the things that people are seeing. This is very much dealing with things outside of us, whereas this is dealing with things inside of us. We're much more comfortable dealing with the outside world than trying to re-engineer our own inside world. Our chronic tendency is to think the solution is always external. And therefore, it's easier to change. Tolstoy once said, "Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing themselves." So it's easier to change the outside than the inside. Here, you generally get an immediate sense of result, or an immediate kind of feedback. Internal things sometimes take a longer duration to see anything, to experience anything, to actually tangibly kind of understand the effects of it. And therefore, generally, because our tendency is always towards prayas, you know, the immediate, therefore we tend towards the practical rather than the internal. And to some extent, the practical is known to us, but the internal is unknown to us. And therefore, it's easier to deal with those things that you know about. We know about how to organize, so let's organize better. We know about what kind of language to use to teach people, so let's change that. But do we know about what it means to re-engineer the heart? That we don't know about. Do we know about what it means to overcome envy and how to go about doing that? That we don't know. So it's much more difficult to deal with the unknown. And so I think for these reasons, sometimes this aspect of life and investing in this aspect can become neglected. Yet if we fail to do this, if we fail to develop the internal dimension of internal dimension of Krishna consciousness, then the practical may well be there. We may well experience many results from that, but the full impact won't occur unless there is simultaneously an internal transformation as well. So I'm just going to kind of, last thing I want to say is that the ideal situation is one of connection. Connection means that our inner life is so rich, is so there's so much vitality in our inner experience of Krishna consciousness that when we go out, we're just sharing that with others effortlessly. So there's inner experience and there's outer preaching, and it all just fits in very, very nicely. That's the ultimate point we're trying to get to. Before we're there, we somewhat have a stage of aspiration. This is a stage where we're maybe not experiencing the totality of Krishna consciousness, and everything that we're preaching in the world, we don't always have realization of it. Sometimes we speak about things that we haven't had experience of. We're hoping and we're praying that by preaching, we'll bring all of that mercy back and then enrich our own internal life so that we can come to higher levels of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, although our inner life isn't fully developed, we have that aspiration that by the outer preaching, we will actually be able to simultaneously get that mercy in order to internally awaken ourselves to a higher reality. So that's beneficial. That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. One thing we may want to be careful of is substitution. Substitution means when one's inner life is stagnant, when one's inner Krishna consciousness is not developing, is not being nurtured, and what we start doing is a lot of external things, a lot of external preaching, a lot of external activity and achievements in order to cover up our internal stagnation, in order to make us feel better that something is happening. And what happens in this stage is that our external achievements give us our sense of self-worth. And because our inner life is not developing and we're deficient there, we cover it up by trying to gain accolade, appreciation, and self-worth from the things that we're doing externally. And in that case, if we go back to the original quote of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that's the point when someone maybe has to look back at their life and question that maybe something needs to be adjusted here. So our outer calling and our outer service should never be a substitution for our inner development of our life. And so I'll end with this thought that we can all think about. Are we as inspired about our internal journey in Krishna consciousness as we are about our practical contribution to the mission? We should be equally enthusiastic about both. Just as we're inspired to do amazing things for Krishna, amazing things for the mission, amazing activities to change the world. Yes, this is the heartbeat of the Krishna consciousness movement. Let us also be as inspired, as enthusiastic about meeting Krishna in the holy name, about meeting Krishna in the Bhagavatam, about meeting Krishna in Vrindavan, and about meeting Krishna in the association of sincere Vaishnavas. We're discussing Krishna Katha and going deeper into the mysteries of this beautiful path of bhakti. Because if we're as inspired about our internal journey in Krishna consciousness as we are about our practical contribution to the mission, then we'll find that not only do we achieve great amounts of traction in our own spiritual progress, but as a mission, we flourish to higher and higher levels, because there's nothing more powerful than an authentic, happy, realized, compassionate, sincere Vaishnava. And so I'll end this little talk with this quote: you can't take the world to a higher place than you have visited internally yourself. So Prabhupada was right there here with Krishna, so he could take people to Krishna. So let us think about this. Achar prachar namer karaha dui karya tumi sarva guru tumi jagater arya. Because you have great achar and because you have great prachar, you are considered the spiritual master of the entire world. And with those thoughts, I will end this little presentation here. I have no idea. I kind of just went into a little bit of a whole thing there.
That was perfect.
I hope that was okay. I didn't plan to speak that long. I was supposed to speak shorter, but...
No, that was perfect, Sudhapuru. Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I was like writing away, and I can see the chat. Like, people have got like so many questions, so I think it's going to be a good Q&A discussion.
Okay, sure.
Session.
I'm in your hands now. You tell me.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll just help facilitate the questions. I'll pick the different people to ask their questions, and they'll kind of like unmute themselves and ask. But before we do that, we just want to do a few quick announcements, because we want to be able to give people something before people might need to start dropping off. So just a quick one for the next session is next week on the 8th of May with His Holiness Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, the victim mentality. It's an interesting topic. And Maharaj, for those of you that don't know, does a lot of preaching across the world, Russia. And he's very... very also scholarly. So we're very fortunate to be joined by Maharaj that next Friday. And let me just double check. Yes, okay. That's everything for now. But the other thing before we go into questions is we're also joined by Vishaka Prabhu, who is the temple president of the Bhaktivedanta Manor. And we're going to try something. It's going to be absolute carnage, and it's going to be absolutely crazy. But it is her birthday or appearance day tomorrow. So what we're going to do is for the next 15 seconds, we're going to unmute everyone and we're going to sing Hare Krishna to you, to Vishaka Prabhu, and we'll see how that works out. So we're going to sing Hare Krishna to you, Hare Krishna to you, Hare Krishna dear Vishaka Prabhu, Hare Krishna to you. Let's see how that turns out. So can we unmute everyone, please, Harsh?
Pause it.
Transcendental activity. That's me,
unfortunately.
Hare
Krishna,
Okay, great. So we muted everyone again. So thank you for your participation on that. But Vishaka Prabhu, thank you so much for joining us. And we're actually very, very, very grateful for the amount of love and time that you've given to Pandavasena. You've been coming to these sessions almost weekly now. And we had the fortune of having you present a session last week. But we're very, very grateful for all the love that you've shown us. And yeah, I mean, if you'd like to say anything as well, then the floor's open for you. And before we go into the questions with Sudhapur.
Thank you so much for allowing me to join you. I'm so inspired by the Pandavasena. I find your energy is wonderful, very sincere and serious. And I feel very fortunate that you allow me to be amongst you. Thank you. And I really enjoyed Sutta Prabhu's presentation, Walk the Talk. I was wondering how that was going to turn out. And I thought he did an excellent job with that. Such an important topic for all of us. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Vishakam. So without taking any more further time, let's dive straight into the questions, because I know loads of people have questions. Can we start off with, I think Swarna Radhika had a question. So can we jump to her if she's here? No, let's leave Swarna Radhika for now. Then let's jump to Charmi. So Charmi, if you have your question, then let's see if we can address that.
Hare Krishna, Sutapa Prabhu. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for your time today. So my question was, as a teacher, I think I strongly believe in setting a good example and living by what you believe in, because I think students are very quick to pick up when you're talking about something that you don't fully believe in. But sometimes I find myself around family and friends that are not Krishna conscious. Sometimes I find myself very weak around them. So I wanted to know, how can I stay strong and true to my roots around people who I love, but simultaneously are not living by the same principles that I live by?
Okay, so if I understand your question, you sometimes are surrounded by people who don't share the same principles as you. So how are you able to remain grounded in what you believe in, even though they don't believe in the same?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. So of course, we know that there is great advantage in being around people who have the same beliefs as us, who share the same principles, because that solidifies, that cements, that reinforces, and that's very, very naturally inspiring for us. Say that the people who don't have the same principles as you, you can also reinforce, cement, and confirm your path in life also by seeing people who don't follow that path. When I go out on book distribution and I'm constantly interacting with people who are obviously not, many of whom not practicing a spiritual path, actually what it does is it gives me more faith. Because I almost feel like, what is there in life? Where are people going? What is their aspiration? What are they able to actually draw upon for inspiration? Once I was on the book distribution and I was on the street and there was a homeless person and he had a sign and it said, "Give me hope." Some people were going past and throwing him money. Some people were giving him a Costa coffee. Some people were giving him some words of encouragement. I practically watched him and thought, all nice sentiments, but who is actually giving that person hope? There's no hope. No hope in material. Where is it going? So if we become more reflective, if we become more thoughtful, then when we observe people who aren't practicing Krishna consciousness, then we'll see that by them not practicing spiritual life, by them not connecting, it actually reinforces that what we're doing is right, if we're in the right headspace. And so the art of Krishna consciousness is that every situation, every interaction can give you a unique asset to strengthen your spiritual life. Just as we say, like Prabhupada said to Giriraj Maharaj, a good businessman knows how to make money when the markets are down and when the markets are up. So he says, when the markets are down, what the businessman does is he buys for cheap. And then he stays. And then when the markets go up, he sells. And when the markets are up, he sells. So either way, whether the market's down or up, the businessman's business of making money goes on somehow or other. So similarly, whether we're in good situation, bad situation, whether we're with strong devotees or weaker devotees, whether we're with devotees or non-devotees, all we have to do is see that every situation is giving us a unique opportunity to try to reinforce our path in life. And you'll see, actually, when you observe people who don't practice Krishna consciousness, of course, we're not doing it in a judgmental way, like a holier-than-thou kind of spirit that, oh, everyone else is going to hell and I'm the best. But you actually see that practically, where is life going for people without this transcendental knowledge, without this transcendental goal? And as Prabhupada said, without this transcendental occupation. Prabhupada said, my spiritual master gave me a transcendental occupation. He employed me in transcendental occupation, sharing Krishna with everyone. So without all of these things, what meaning is there really to life? So let us become thoughtful and let us see for a minute that even our interactions with people who aren't practicing Krishna consciousness can give us a lot of realization. But in order to get that realization, we have to be in good consciousness. Otherwise, when book distributors go out on Sankirtan, they'll look at everyone else and think, these guys are happier than me. They're doing better than me. I'm here standing in the rain and I have to be out here for 10 hours. And I don't know if there's going to be any prasadam left at the temple. Maybe I should go on their side. So as we're more nourished in our own spiritual life, having good association with Vaishnavas and becoming stronger, then when we're with non-devotees, we'll find that that's also a strengthening experience in its own way.
Some thank thoughts. You.
It's a bigger topic than some thoughts.
Thank you, Siddhartha Prabhu.
Thank you for the wonderful question. Keep your questions coming in. I know it's like there's loads of people have questions, so we might not be able to go through all of them tonight, because I'm sure Sita Prabhu doesn't have until midnight to go through all of them. But the next question, can we go to Vinay Raniger for now? Vinay Raniger?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Sita Prabhu. Very well. I asked the admins to ask my question, but I guess they already unmuted me. So I just wanted to ask about the holy name, and does that, when you're chanting the holy name, does it also reveal your role in sharing Krishna consciousness? I'm sure at like a young age or kind of a beginner stage that I'm at, it doesn't do that. But what is the journey of the holy name revealing your practical sharing of Krishna consciousness? Is that possible?
Everything in Krishna consciousness plays its part. Specifically, the holy name is Kalikiler Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar, that the holy name is Krishna's incarnation in this age. And therefore, specifically what the holy name is, the holy name is our entrance into our deeper relationship with Krishna. Therefore, we say Nama, Guna, Rupa, Leela, that Nama is the trigger. And then from Nama, Krishna's Rupa, Krishna's Guna, Krishna's Leela, everything will be revealed in terms of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. Now, we also see that not only is the Nama our introduction to Krishna, the Naam is also dealing with many other aspects of our life, the purification of our hearts, therefore Cheto, Darpana, Marjanam, and all these things. So the point I'm kind of coming to is that the holy name is part of a series or a set of spiritual practices which are part of our achar, our spiritual development. And all of those spiritual practices combinedly help us get the messages and realizations and insights about how to go on this journey of spiritual life in this world and how to ultimately reach Krishna. So through the combination of our sadhana, our association with sadhus, our reading of shastra, and then the enlightenment of guru, everything is being revealed about our journey. So Naam is like one of the major factors in that revelation of what our journey is. But specifically, Naam is the means by which we're ushered into our relationship with Krishna. But as I said, Naam is part of the set of spiritual practices which then ultimately reveal how we're meant to be living spiritual life in the here and now, what kind of services we're meant to be doing, and what decisions to make. And all of this is revealed by Guru Sadhu Shastra, Nam, Sadhana, all as a combined process. So I wouldn't say you can isolate it like that, that Nam reveals what, you know, the next project you should be doing. But through Nam, you see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took that shelter of Nam, and then he, you know, got the empowerment and realization of how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. So the empowerment and the purification which comes from chanting Nam helps us to illuminate our journey in life.
Thank you.
Hope that helps.
Yeah, that does. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Vinay. We've got a few people who want to want me to ask the question. There's a similar theme coming up by a few people, like Amika and Manju. And the question is, Sudhapuru, is there a guideline or any tips to recognize when we're ready in our bhakti journey to start sharing with others? Like, is there a moment where you start realizing, okay, now I've got to a point where it's okay to start sharing? And are there like any specific qualities that you have to have mastered to be able to preach?
You see, so this is an important point that, you know, prachar doesn't begin at a certain point, in the sense that preaching goes on different levels. You see, the lowest level of preaching is when we preach out of ego. Then a little higher than that is when we preach for some material benefit, name, fame, and all of these things. Higher than that is when we preach because our teachers have told us to do it. And then higher than that is when we preach out of love. So preaching can take place on many levels, and we have to start somewhere, because we can't start from the platform of preaching from the platform of love, because we don't have that love. So therefore, we begin from the platform of duty. And our acharyas have said, Mahaprabhu has said, Jare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh, Amara Agyaya Guru Tanahara E Desh. So Mahaprabhu has already given the order, make your life successful and help others. So that begins from day one in the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's not a question of not preaching or when do you start preaching, but it's more a question of when you do begin preaching, how to do it in a genuine way, in a sincere way, and in a way so that simultaneously, along with your preaching, you're developing your internal life as well. So the danger is not in preaching. The danger is in, number one, how you preach. And the danger is, number two, in how you deal with your own internal development while you're preaching. If you preach in the right mood, and if you preach simultaneous sincerity to evolve your own spiritual life, then you can preach from day one and there's no problem at all. And not only is there no problem, it will be highly beneficial for you. So we don't need to see it like a linear process like that, that there's a certain stage where you become qualified. No, you're qualified because you're connected to the most qualified personalities in the universe. And therefore, if you repeat what they say, then you're safe. But then also the mood has to be right and the internal development has to be going on.
Thank you for that answer. And I think another person has a question that almost like leads on to that. So Saraswati, if you're there, I think we can bring your question now. So Saraswati, please ask your question. Maybe she's not there. So I'll just ask it. The question is, how do we stay true to ourselves and our conviction while the influence of others and Maya is quite strong? So how can we be authentic in our preaching?
So I didn't understand. Is this talking about how, how to be, because you said authentic in your preaching. Can you just clarify?
The question is, how do we stay true to ourselves and our conviction while the influence of others and Maya is strong?
Okay. So how do we say true to ourselves while the influence of Maya and others is strong? I mean, it seems to me like a similar question to what Charmi was asking, that, you know, if others around you are not sharing the same principles as you or are opposing you, then you know, how do you remain strong? And I mentioned the point of seeing that every situation there's an opportunity to strengthen your own conviction. One thing I'll say is this: Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, preaching is like homeopathic medicine. And he said, when you take homeopathic medicine, what happens is sometimes the disease that you're treating gets worse before it gets better, but that's part of the process. And he used this analogy to explain that when we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, when we're advancing in our preaching and in our own internal development, then what Krishna will do is he'll send more opposition. He'll send more obstacles. And that is actually part of the confirmation that something is actually happening. Now, as long as we have the proper support structure around us to deal with that opposition, to deal with those obstacles, to deal with those difficulties, then we'll find that we come out of the whole thing stronger. So the first thing is, I would say, when opposition comes, when difficulties and obstacles come, don't be scared by that. Understand that that's part of the process of Krishna sending you things to strengthen yourself and deepen your character. And the second thing is, make you have the support structure around you to deal with that. And let me say this final thing. If we want to embrace purity in our life, we were just having a talk with the brahmacharis the other day talking about purity. And the conclusion was, there is no purity, there is no question of purity without honesty. Out of the six loving exchanges between Vaishnavas, probably in ISKCON, the two loving exchanges that we're weakest in is Guhyam Akhyati Prachyati, revealing one's mind in confidence and inquiring confidentially. But without these relationships, without this honesty, without this sincere exchange and revelation of what obstacles are there and how to overcome that, practically it will be very difficult for someone to embrace purity in their life. So before there can be purity, there must be honesty. So we must have those support structures around us in order to have that honest exchange. Sorry, I don't know if I addressed the question. It was but something there.
I also don't know if that's, but yeah, I get it was either way, it was still a great answer for us to hear from. So the next question is from Abhay. So Abhay, if you're there, if you can unmute yourself and yeah.
Hi, Prabhu. Thank you for your class. You were talking about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur being a Gaustianandi and a very bold preacher. So just how can we get this confidence that he and so many other preachers, amazing preachers had?
How can we get this confidence and this conviction?
Yeah, confidence.
Once they are Srila Prabhupada, you're going across the world, you're preaching to philosophers, you're preaching to theologians, you're preaching to academics, you're preaching to all these intelligent people. How do you get the confidence to do it? How do you get the confidence to challenge these atheists straight on their face? Prabhupada said, how can I believe them when they tell me there's no Krishna, when I'm seeing Krishna every moment in my life? So the confidence comes from Krishna consciousness, from being, there's a course like that, right? Krishna confident. When we're experiencing Krishna, when we're feeling the joy of Krishna consciousness, that is the ultimate confirmation of everything that we're doing. And so Prabhupada said, preaching, that is an easy thing. Just show people how happy you are. So that is an interesting point. He said, preaching is easy business. Just show people how happy you are, because factually the whole world is miserable. So when a devotee is feeling Krishna, they're happy, they're experiencing the joy of spiritual life, then you'll find that the conviction comes. And let me also say this, that confidence comes from humility. When we're humble, when we actually develop humility, when we realize I'm nothing, but the teachings are amazing. I'm lame, ill-advised, I'm dumb, but the acharyas are incredible. I'm weak, I'm, you know, I don't have so much purity, but the holy name is all transformational. And we realize that the preaching, the weight of the preaching is not dependent on us, because we are practically broken instruments. So when we realize it's not me, but if I give them the real thing, then the real thing will do the business. Then you can be confident because you have that humility and you realize I'm just a via medium. So the more we become humble and the more we realize it's not me, then we can have confidence to do the work and become Krishna's instrument. Those are some, it's a very good question. I mean, many things we could say, but some thoughts.
Thank you for that. We also have a question from Naveen Krishna, Prabhu. So if you could ask your question.
Hare Krishna, Siddha Prabhu. Question is, you know, the chart that you had with the red, amber, green bands. So that in that chart where you're showing that in terms of the different levels. So the question is it reasonable to use preaching as a means of purification to move up the bands? Because that's how I understood one possible aspect of this. Or do you feel this is not, like, is that an incorrect approach? Or if we do it, we just have to be careful? Because the thing is that moving up the bands through internal connection and reaching in, as you put it, may not be as kind of efficacious as we might hope.
Preaching shouldn't be the sole thing with moving up the bands. So it's not a problem. Of course, preaching. Prabhupada knew that. Like Prabhupada knew his disciples. So many of them from day one, he just engaged them in projects and engaged them in amazing activities whereby they would spread the Krishna consciousness movement and through that activity purify themselves. But simultaneously, Prabhupada made sure they were following spiritual standards. Prabhupada made sure of a morning program. He made sure of a program of study. He made sure of many other things that were there so that simultaneous to the purification which comes from the preaching comes the internal development. So substitution happens when we basically give up on the internal journey. We stagnate in the internal journey. We put the focus on the preaching, and then the inspiration, the results, the accolades, the things that come from preaching, which inspire us to continue going on, consume us so much, or we become so much focused on that we don't simultaneously put the focus on simultaneously developing ourselves internally. So yes, we are using preaching as a means of purification, for sure, because we're so passionate that we can't sit down for 9 years and chant 192 rounds a day. But we can do something, and we should be doing more. And the more we do simultaneous to our preaching to help each other go deeper and deeper, then we can ensure that we stay in the stage of aspiration rather than substitution. Because the movement does show a history of personalities who did incredible things for the movement, who made incredible preaching endeavors, who made incredible sacrifices, but still something went wrong along the way because maybe a simultaneous focus on other things wasn't being given. It's just our duty in the community of Vaishnavas to remind each other about it and help each other, and in that way stay on the safe path.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Let's move on to Kishan. So Kishan Pound, thank you for joining us. Could you please ask your question?
Thank you, Siddhartha Prabhu. I just had a quick question in terms of Bhaktisiddhanta and Prabhupada both had some period of deep absorption before they started their mission. Bhaktisiddhanta had his billion names gone and Prabhupada in Vrindavan. So I was wondering, is this like an example that's being set that we should also, aspire to or try to do in some way?
This is like a setup for me to promote Brahmachari life, is it? Kishan. Okay. The principle stands that we must spend some time in deep absorption in Krishna consciousness. The principle stands as part of Varnashram that we must build our life on a foundation. What if we think about student life? I could say Brahmachari. Okay, let's take Brahmachari life. Brahmachari gurukule vasandanta guroritam acharan dasavan nicho guru sudrida saurida. Forget about the word Brahmachari, but what's the foundation that's being established in the ashram? Vasandanta gurorhitam. Danta means to be self-controlled, to be mind-controlled. Acharan, perfect character. Dashavan, to learn service attitude. Nicho, to develop humility. Guru Sudrida Saurida, to develop deep relationships with others, spiritual authorities, or friendship that can help you move on. These are kind of like key principles that if we have in our life at the foundation, then will continue to help you throughout your life. So ideally, there should be some system whereby helping devotees to develop a very strong foundation, a very strong set of spiritual characteristics that will support them at every stage of their life. Now, how we do that, in what way we implement it, that requires thought. We're living in a world in which there's so many demands, it's complex, and how we basically manage that, we have to see. But the principle stands that there must be some foundation upon which we're building devotees' spiritual lives, upon which we're building our spiritual life. Because then, just as we a building can only go as high as its roots, you can build and build and build higher and higher and put another and another floor on top and top and top. But the moment there's some winds, the moment there's some earthquake, the moment there's some natural unpredictable event, then the whole thing will topple. So we must develop those deep foundations, and how we do that and in what way we do that, that just requires ingenious thinking of how to do that. And whether it's a specific time in which you do that, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Srila Prabhupada, where there's a time, a focused time of preparation, or whether there's a program whereby someone's going on in their life but taking a little bit of time every day to do something, or every week or every year for 1 month, that's just details. But the principle stands that we must prepare to do something amazing. But the preparation, when we see the most amazing preachers in ISKCON doing things, what we sometimes don't see is the whole part of their life before that. We see the ice, you know, on top, but we don't see everything that's below the sea level. So in every great Vaishnava's life, there was great preparation, there was great meditation, and there was great roots being formed in order to do take on that mission. So take the principle seriously. If we take the principle, then we'll work out the details.
Thank you, Sri Prabhu. I think we're going to probably have to bring it to a close there.
Sure.
Thank you so much for all of your, sorry to all the people that had questions that were coming, but we're very fortunate to have Sutta Prabhu's time. So thank you so much for joining us today and giving such an incredible presentation, such an interactive Zoom presentation for sure. So I particularly enjoyed the annotations as well. So I felt like it was like, yeah, and the time went by very quickly. And such incredible, such a good topic. And just a final reminder to everyone that for next week, the time is earlier. So 12:50 p.m. for Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj's talk, because it's a bank holiday. So please do join earlier. And apart from that, that's everything from our side. Are there any final remarks from yourself, Sutta Prabhu, something that we can take away or something that we should think about from the talk?
No, I guess, no, I think I said what I need to say. No, I really appreciate all the devotees and yeah, let me end on this by saying that many years ago, over 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, when I first met the devotees from Pandavasena, you transformed my life. You gave me so much care, love, energy, so much encouragement. A lot of opportunities for service, many of which I didn't ask for and I didn't want. But I got the mercy. So I'm a product of the sinner's mercy. I feel so happy to be connected with all of you. I want to say that Pandavasena is doing so many incredible things to spread Krishna consciousness. And when I think of all of you, I feel so much hope for the Krishna consciousness movement. And I really am here to serve and assist in whatever way I can, because I have a debt of gratitude to all of you. So all grace to Pandavasena, and let us all grow together in our achar and our prachar, and in this way let's do something amazing for Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for setting such a shining example for us. We really appreciate it. And to thank you, we're going to do some crazy stuff as well. So you're going to be all unmuted, and we want you to all very loudly give Sutta Prabhu a very loud Hari Bol.
Please, pehla join karna
ek. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol.
Thank you so much, Sutta Prabhu, and thank you all for joining. See you all next week. Hare Krishna.
Hare.